as a leader, you're doing more listening than directing and telling people what to do. And it's getting enough information from others to help make a decisive, informed decision to help move things along. So, you know, if you have great prioritization, if you can listen and coach and delegate and not feel like you need to own everything, and if these words sound like, hey, you know, that sounds interesting, I like to sort of do that, then explore it. Take some leadership courses. Join groups of leaders that have sort of navigated through. Like, there are different, so many different ways for you to kind of get acclimated to the thought of leadership without being thrusted into the fire when you're not ready.
Hello and welcome to Developer's Journey, the podcast bringing you the making of stories of successful software developers to help you on your upcoming journey. I'm your host, Tim Bourguignon. On this episode 249, I receive Claude Jones. Claude is a self-taught developer who found his passion back in... Let's hear it from him directly in a minute. He's now a senior executive with over 18 years of experience building, leading, and scaling high-performing product development teams. Claude balances his time being an, that's a mouthful, beware, entrepreneur, an intrapreneur, and a passionpreneur. I'm sure we'll get into this in a minute. Helping create opportunities to help others succeed. He runs the Elevate Foundation, an organization focused on helping others in need. He also leads the San Diego Tech Hub. And finally, he writes a series of children's picture books to foster the development of leadership skills in children age 5 to 8. I find this fascinating. Last but not least, you can learn more about him and his leadership approach on his homepage, the Practical Leadership Guy. I'll add a link to the show notes. Claude, welcome to Dev Journey.
Hey, Tim, it's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. The pleasure is really all mine. But before we come to your story, I want to thank the terrific listeners who support the show every month. You are keeping the Dev Journey lights up. If you would like to join this fine crew and help me spend more time on finding phenomenal guests than editing audio tracks, please go to our website, devjourney.info, and click on the Support Me on Patreon button. Even the smallest contributions are giant steps toward a sustainable Dev Journey journey. Thank you. And now back to today's guest. Claude, as you know, the show exists to help the listeners understand what your story looked like and imagine how to shape their own future. So as is usual on the show, let's go back to your beginnings. Where would you place the start of your dev journey?
Oh, man. Well, I'm going to use a word called Beanie Babies. Not sure if people know what Beanie Babies are.
I don't.
Myself. Beanie Babies were these small little plush toys that were all the rave back in the 90s. You still might find them around. But I had a friend at the time that was a collector of Beanie Babies. And we were looking at trying to find some way of being able to showcase, you know, this collection of Beanie Babies on the web at the time. And didn't know how to do it. I picked up a book on HTML and I guess CSS wasn't around back then, but just HTML and inline styles and just learn how to code. And I think the thing that I was really excited about was taking something physical and making it digital and then seeing the excitement that people had, and was another way of being able to tap into a form of creativity. So that started my itch into getting into coding.
Wow. That was an itch. That was just helping that friend. When did you realize, there is more than just helping this one time? I could do something with it. I could really make a career maybe out of it.
You know, when people were like, that's really cool, how'd you do that? And I felt like I had the superpower. I mean, really, when someone was like, you know, you have to think about it. Back in the days, like in the early 90s, like the web, it was new. Mm-hmm. And so it was like the sacred thing. And if you could take someone's picture, put it on the web, you know, everyone could see it. I remember in one of my college courses, I had made an online resume for myself and, you know, out of a web page, and everyone else is turning in like their paper forms to do the review. And I had this like, hey, go to my like homepage and check out my online resume. And it would just like, it was a wow experience. And everybody wanted, oh, I want one of those. It's really cool. And so, you know, it made this connection of this need and this interest, the creativity, doing something different, getting the excitement from people made me want to learn more, you know, from that. And so in my mind, I was trying to soak up as much as I could, you know, on my own to figure out, you know, what could really come. But I never thought like, oh, this is going to be a career that I can make money off of. I really didn't.
But it came at some point, didn't it?
It did come. It really did. And I worked at a grocery store. And when I started diving into technology, I had a customer had come in to the grocery store, and he was bragging about he worked for this company, Solar Turbines, and you know he was responsible for something that had to do with computers. And I heard the word computer, I was like, oh hey, you know, can I come and see and kind of see some things out? And so he set me up with a tour of the facilities. Now, little did I know, when he was talking about computers, it was more about like maintaining the systems on the floor to kind of help with, you know, how they were shifting or optimizing some of the turbines and what they were doing. It had nothing to do with building like websites or anything. So it wasn't what I expected. He connected me with someone. It was like this internal group that dealt with like processes, like automating certain processes on the floor. And they were looking at trying to digitize a lot of the manual processes that existed. So I called, that guy's name was Johnny. I don't even remember the last name, but this guy, Johnny, I called him every single week for a month. And I said, hey, do you have any job openings? Have any job openings? I swore they got sick of me. And he finally said, look, we created an internship for you. It's 6 months. So why don't you join? And you're going to be responsible for being our internal like webmaster, you know, and the scope of this work is to take a lot of these files and digitize them, create like a whatever internal search things, people can find them and get all this stuff. I said, great. You know, I'll sign up for this. So when I knew I was in trouble, because this, again, I was self-taught. I was sitting in the room with all the other webmasters from the, you know, from the company. They started talking about cookies, and I'm sitting here thinking, okay, cookies. What does cookies have to do with like the web or what was going on? And they're thinking about the size limit of cookies. They were thinking about, you know, deleting cookies, adding information to cookies, and you know, everyone's nodding their head. I'm thinking like, what the hell am I missing? And so, of course, I raised my hand. And I said, you know, I'm confused on like this cookie management and what it means. Like, why, what is this with data and cookies, and where do you get these cookies from? And of course there were chuckles and things that were going on, but there was a kind person that had, you know, pulled me aside and just said, hey, look, and kind of explained cookies and what that was and what was going on. But it was just fascinating. There was so much to learn, and I would just hit the brink of it. So that, you know, I worked at Solar Turbines for, you know, a few years before I had an opportunity. And if I can kind of expand on that, like I was still going to college at this time. I went from, you know, more static page development to Code Fusion markup language, if you could remember, and, you know, connecting that up with like an Access database. And so I started getting to more dynamic web pages, getting into queries. And I just found it so interesting. And I really just kind of elevated my game. And I would say nothing is more valuable than hands-on experience. And the programming courses that I took in school did not compare to anything that I had learned on the job, just having mentors, people that were willing to kind of coach, and just my own self-learning and kind of connecting the dots there. So that really laid the foundation for my interest and love on just solving problems, you know, using code.
That is awesome, and thank you for this delighting story about cookies, because we all have one of those in our past where we just didn't connect the dots yet. And mine is probably my uncle. I've told this on the show before. My uncle giving me a C++ book, and I think I read the books twice, cover to cover. I just didn't understand how to build a program. So I could program in my head. I could do everything. I just missed this first step. And at the time it clicked a few years later, I felt so dumb. I said, whoa. And you can program all this and write it, and the computer is going to do it for you, etc. You just have to understand a make command. Oh, wow. And sometimes you just miss something like this, and then the whole world is hidden from you. And so amen for this guy who helped you understand all this and was friendly enough to just take your hand and show you this. So really cool. Before we move on your story, I'd like to come back to one other thing. You said, okay, you were learning and you were self-taught. And did you know how you best learn at that time already? Did you know what you need to really get on with self-learning, obviously on your own?
Yeah, I didn't. It was really trial and error. You know, now I think we're all familiar with learning things, kind of going through school, research, you know, trial and error. And it was some of those fundamental principles that I kind of leaned on. And I think for me, what was really a big driving factor was that I was passionate about it. It was interest. It was like a hobby. You know, when you think about a hobby, you consume as much information as possible. And so it felt like I was doing something fun. It was a puzzle. And I really enjoyed that. And so the learning for me was going back to what I knew in school, get a book, sit down, study, got a test and figure some things out. And I had purchased a computer, $2,000. Oh my gosh. I think I had like 1 mega RAM. Like it was just silly on the power of this thing. But I had fixed this up. We had free internet through school. So I had configured that to work. So I didn't have to go to lab. I could do everything at home. And so my learning was getting the book from the library, sitting down on my computer in my apartment, and it was hours and hours and hours and hours of, you know, trying to learn, trial and error, building out pages, figuring out some things on my own. And, you know, the more that I did, the more that things made sense and the more intelligent questions I could ask to get the answers that I needed in order to continue to refine and get the things that I was doing. And, you know, I just became more confident, you know, throughout my journey. But, you know, that curiosity was so important in the early stages.
Mm-hmm. Cool for you that you realized this early on and were able to feed it, this curiosity beast early enough and just get growing and feel like a hobby before it became a job. That's really cool. So you were telling us about solar turbines and the years you worked there. And did that feel like a job yet or not quite?
You know, not quite, because it got to a certain point to where like building static web pages and doing updates, it started to become trivial. Mm-hmm. And then like I kind of outgrew. I was like, man, I want something more challenging. And there was the gentleman that I had mentioned, I can't even remember his name, that kind of talked to me about the cookies. He had left Solar Turbines to go work for a company called Kayenta. And so this was a smaller company. You know, what I can remember, they had some C code that were moving over to Java, but they were building like these internal tools. And he says, Claude, I think you should go apply for this company. And I'm like, no, like I don't know what it is. And he was showing me the job description. They were talking about JSPs, EJBs, lifecycle management. It was Java. Like I had no clue. And, you know, I was just starting to code JavaScript, like, you know, getting into and understanding some of the fundamentals with JavaScript and getting that going. And so he says, Claude, I'm going to put in a good work for you. Go talk to this guy, Bruce. His name was Bruce. So I went in for this interview. I sat down and now at this point in time, I had built up this little resume of like school projects that I had done. You know, I had this laptop with all these just projects and things and just my portfolio. It was a portfolio of things that I had done in the past just to show the level of competency that I had at, you know, for me. So I come equipped, you know, in my best suit, you know, my laptop and, you know, this print out of all this stuff. And the guy starts talking and explaining about what they're doing within the company and, you know, asked me what my interests were. So I shared with him about, you know, front-end experience and what I'd like to do. He says, oh, that's great. He says, so you've done some JavaScript, some HTML, and, you know, some styling type work. He's like, well, are you familiar with, you know, Java and what maybe some of the differences between Java and JavaScript is? And I was like, well, it's a programming language and one has script at the end. And it was like, you know, he's looking at me. Yeah, very literal, right? And, you know, he's talking to me and looking at me and, you know, these questions are just kind of going left and right. You know, I mentioned he was talking about lifecycle management. What are you doing? Object-oriented programming. And of course, a lot of these terms are sort of going over my head. I can't really talk to them in detail. And this went on for about 10 minutes. And then he stopped and he said, what's wrong? And I guess he must have seen the look on my face or whatever was going on. And I said, you know, I just don't feel that I'm doing a very good job with this interview. And I just don't think I'm qualified, you know, to be here. But I really want to thank you for your time and giving me this opportunity. And he says, wait, what are you saying? And I said, well, I just don't think I'm a good fit. He says, well, it's sad to see you say that because I was going to hire you. And I said, what? And I was like, well, why? And he says, look, you're honest. He says, there's some level of competency that you have, self-starting individual. And, you know, I just feel that you have the potential to be something great. And he says, if I take those three things and put you in an environment to where you can learn and grow, I have no doubt you're going to be successful, you know, whatever I throw at you. And I would tell you that this is the first time in my life that I had someone really believe, you know, in a setting like that, in the potential that I had in something that was unknown and willing to put me in an environment to really coach and mentor me to accelerate and like invest in me on something. And so it wasn't a full-time position, it was a contracting position, but I was thrown, man, into the fire. And there were things I didn't know, but there were people there that were supporting me and helping me grow. And that's where I really learned Java on the job. And I was responsible for a lot of the sort of integrating with some of the backend services that they had, how to get into databases, writing queries, really truly optimizing, you know, the query management, building custom tags. Like it was a great way of helping to bootstrap that side of my career. And I was there for about a year before that company had closed down, but it was a great, surprising and enlightening experience for me.
That is such a great story. This is actually what I've been trying to preach for years, is saying, well, don't search for the keywords, search for competency, search for honesty, and search for somebody who's been deep once and can tell about that. And if they've done it once, then no question asked, they'll be able to do it again if you have the right setup. But it's so rare to find a real story where that really happened. And that's so cool. And the fact that you actually say, well, we have to stop this interview. I don't feel competent. This is just, my jaw was on the floor. I say this. It's amazing. You've had quite a few interviews on the other side of the table since. We're jumping ahead of us. Have you seen this again from the other side at least once?
Meaning that people saying they weren't qualified for the position, or me playing the role that Bruce played for me?
Let's go with both.
Yeah. You know, anytime that I'm interviewing someone, I always look at potential. And if I feel that someone just won't be successful in the role, I will give them tips on, look, this is what you should study. This is kind of what's going on, to where it becomes more of a coaching session than an interview session. Because I feel like that's important to help someone scale in their journey. Everything's a learning experience. You know, I haven't had anyone really say, I don't think I'm a good fit for this role. You know, because everyone's trying to put their best foot forward. And you have to be vulnerable to say something like that. That might not come across as confident. Mm-hmm. Now, if I do feel that someone might be struggling, it seems a little awkward, because you can tell, you know, when things are kind of going through. You know, this is where I think leadership steps in to help guide people through that process, right? And there's ways of being able to talk to individuals to allow them to understand where there's opportunities and to guide them through, you know, whether this is a good fit or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether that is asking a question about, let's say if we're trying to look at, you know, explain how HTTP works. You know, if you were coding and how that works, and if people are kind of struggling with that, you know, I would actually stop and say, hey, you know, if we were in a real scenario and we didn't know the answer to something, it's important to try to understand what are the right questions to ask, because reality is that you're never going to be asked a question on the spot and expect to know the answer right away. We have tools like the web or books or forums to do that. So then you transition to, if you don't know the answer to something, what type of question would you ask to find that answer? And if the person truly understands like the type of question to ask, that means that they have the ability to troubleshoot to find the answers that they need, mm-hmm. right? And if they don't, it becomes a self-fulfilling, like they'll know right away, like, I don't know what question to ask. Now you can have another conversation. And that's where coaching comes in. So at the end of that interview, the person's going to say like, wow, thank you for helping me guide that. Now I understand how to ask the right types of questions as I continue to navigate through my career. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so like I changed the dynamic of the interview to where interviews are just really icky and uncomfortable sometimes, and very similar to us even engaging. You know, how do you bring that comfort and humanizing the whole approach? And that mm-hmm. always tends to work for me.
That is awesome. I like that you're making the most of that interview, that job interview, saying, well, maybe we're realizing that it might not be a good fit for now, but we have X minutes ahead of us. Let's make the most of it. Let's right. Help this person understand where there is some potential, where they could learn next, and they will remember the company in a good way. They remember me as an interviewer in a good way, and maybe it will be a fit in a couple of years. Who knows? Maybe it won't be, but that will be fine as well. And so that's really cool of you.
That's right. Everyone wins. Everybody wins. And that's what life is about, when everyone wins.
I don't know how to rebound on that. So I know we dwelled a little bit on management or interviewing already. When did that side of the job enter your life? You were a software developer, we're in there. I'm peeking on your bio and on your LinkedIn on the side, so I know there is a couple of jobs in there. But when did this idea of maybe I could be helping people and not just code enter your life and slowly become your full-time job?
You know, I've had a lot of great managers in my career, and I've had a lot of managers that just had opportunities, you know, as I was kind of navigating around. And what it helped me realize is, it helped shape, if I was in a leadership position, what would that look like for me? And, you know, I had the opportunity of going from, you know, an individual contributor to, you know, a team lead, and, you know, wanting to do management, thinking that I wanted a chance to see what I couldn't do to lead a team, or maybe do things a little differently from some of the things that I've seen in the past. And so I had this desire to want to lead and do more and do it in the most effective and efficient way, to where work could still be fun, but you can work hard to get shit done type of thing. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question around when this started, I would say at Yahoo. And that was my first job, as having the title of, like, you know, manager, engineering manager. And again, as I mentioned, I had this burning desire to want to lead, wanted to be a manager. And I remember talking to my boss's boss, went on a walk with him, and I said, look, I want to be a manager. And I was just kind of describing some of the challenges that I was having and what I wanted to do and how I could do it better. And he said, look, Claude, I'm going to tell you something. You know, you trying to be a self-proclaimed manager is not going to happen. And he said, you know, no, you're not going to be a manager. And no, I'm not going to give you that opportunity. And he says, the way that I know that you're ready for management is that when you're acting as if. He says, a title, you know, does not mean that you're a manager. You know, it's the actions, what you do. Are people following you? You know, how are you thinking about certain things? It's like that, you know, when you're already a manager before you have the title of manager is when you're ready. And after that walk, I was deflated. I was angry. I was like, you don't know me. I've done all this stuff. I had all these things going on. And it just talked about the right time for everything and just having patience. Because I was very impatient in my career because it was always easy. I picked up a book, I learned how to do something and I do it, right? It's zeros and ones. And that's the way things work, you know, in programming, right? Well, in leadership, it doesn't work that way. You're dealing with people. You're not dealing with a computer. And you have to be very adaptive with everything that's going on. And I hadn't really mastered that adaptability just quite yet. You know, it was still new. I was still green. And I would say after a year of me just finally having this sink in, there was some attrition that had happened within the company to where Juan was his name, was like, okay, we're going to have Claude, you know, take on a leadership role. And so I had my management, and I think my first team size, I want to say it was like 6 or 8. I can't remember. And the beauty of it was, is that the team that reported in me, there was no awkwardness like, oh, now Claude's our manager. Cause I had built a solid relationship with them. I brought that, you know, operational efficiency, you know, clear objectives, you know, balancing work scope. So there's good work-life balance. And it felt so good to be able to collaboratively work with others to achieve things that seemed impossible, because we all could do it. And that was a very contagious thing for me to where it's like, I wanted more of that. So it started there, and you know, never look back.
Awesome to hear. just rebounding on this, almost last sentence, not quite the last one. You said, well, getting shit done and seeing things move and getting your kick out of that. This is actually a pain point for managers quite often, because you're not in control of that kick anymore. When you're an IC, an individual contributor, you're in front of your computer, you're doing stuff. If you do it well, you get that kick multiple times a day. As manager, you're living that by proxy. Did you have a transition period in this where you struggled with that, or was it just boom and you got your kick from somewhere else, from seeing that team booming and doing things and just being happy about that?
Yeah, you know, I would say at Yahoo, if I understood the question correctly, it was kind of that transition between IC to management and where I was kind of getting that momentum or from. I would say at Yahoo, I was still playing a technical and managerial role. Like I was still sort of hands-on while doing that balance, because the team size wasn't that big, and the type of political fun that I had to deal with, it wasn't that much. And so I was still able to get that balance and hands on. So I was like knee deep in the trenches with the team from a coding as we're kind of driving towards certain things. If I could transition to my time at Walmart, that's where I had to make the choice of being like an IC versus being a manager, because I could not code and be like heads down and still manage the team effectively to accomplish the things that we needed to do. Couldn't happen. Mm-hmm. And so that was a very tough transition to make, because I honestly felt like I wasn't going to have the respect of the team. I felt like I wasn't a part of the team, because I wasn't in there like coding and doing a lot of the things that we're doing, staying up late. Like I was staying up late dealing with more like strategy, you know, vision, you know, priority alignment. Like it was completely different from like sitting down in front of an IE and getting something done. Mm-hmm, but it took, I would say, a good 7 months, to be honest with you, on changing the actual habit and putting the discipline and being comfortable with understanding that my role as a leader is about helping to remove roadblocks, helping to provide clear strategy, making sure that roles, responsibilities, expectations are clear. How are you coaching and mentoring and resolving conflict within the group? It required a whole nother set of skills that, while there might've been some things that were innate in me, I still needed to hone and be adaptive, because people are different. Everyone is different, and how you talk and what's going on and what motivates them. It's really being in tune and understanding and building a personal relationship. So having a very high EQ was something that I needed to really invest time and energy in and hone. Did that answer the question?
It kind of did. Yes, in a two bands way, but yes, it did. But that bears one more question. In this first role at Yahoo, you grew from within. You were in the team and at some point took over. So you had built this this street credibility. People were willing to follow you right away. When you were, and I'm picking that word, I'm not sure the right one, dropped at Walmart, and you didn't have that. In which way did it help you or hinder you to start in this new role?
Yeah. So one of the beautiful things about Walmart is I was asked to help bootstrap the Southern California office out here in San Diego. And one of the requirements for that was I needed to find 8 other people that would come join me on this journey before they invested in opening an office. And so I was able to get, 8 people. It was a total of 13, but 8 people that were reporting into me. And so I had that sort of familiarity with folks that I had worked with in the past. Now, to build on what you're saying, Walmart was, it has 2.4 million people that work there in a distributed place. I was remote. The main corporate office headquarters was Bentonville, and the main tech was out in Sunnyvale, and I didn't know anyone, and it was extremely stressful to walk into an environment where you didn't know anyone and you had to prove yourself. I mean, literally, you were proving yourself and what was going on, and it was challenging. It was a challenging experience because it's like people just did not respect you for who you were. And, they were constantly challenging you, pushing back. And it just speaks to the art of relationship building. And it speaks to, for the things that you're doing, especially at that scale, does anyone care about it? And if no one cares about what you're working on, you're not going to get any traction. It's just a hobby. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing a hobby too much for a job you're getting paid for, you're not going to have a job that long. It definitely took some time. And what I learned from that is, seeking out people that I could really work with, to build strategic partnerships, just being in a new environment, it's important. The other thing is learning the environment and the dynamics around it, coming into a new space. Do I understand how it operates, who the key decision stakeholders are, what are some of the pain points and problems that need to be solved? And then once I have that foundation, it's being clear on what are the goals that I need to focus on that will add the right value for the customer, for the business, and also for the success of the team. And even when I had all that stuff mapped out, I failed a lot because there were certain things or certain approaches that I would take, but I didn't look at failure as a way of me like not being successful. I looked at it as a way that I was just learning and refining my approach and what I needed to do. And the more that I had those experiences, the more that it built my confidence, knowing that it didn't matter what was going on. I could walk into a room and I understood, the Walmart language and how to kind of navigate, in that environment. Did that answer the question?
Yes, it did. When do you make the difference between failing and learning and maybe failing and not learning?
Oh, man.
Wrong question to ask.
No, it's a great question. And I think it's, when I joined Walmart, our original role for the team was to build the front end architecture for Walmart.com. And, Walmart was transitioning to really bring a lot of their tech in-house instead of, outsourcing or leveraging a third-party tool. Now, when I joined, there was another team doing something very similar to what we were doing. And so you can think about just that duplication of effort and some of the challenges that tends to come up with. So you think about ego, You think about just change management, collaboration, you know, all the things that you think can go wrong with kind of unifying efforts had gone wrong. And it went so bad that, you know, I needed to pivot what my team was working on. And so I had to make the strategic decision on pivoting, you know, to something new. And so we focused on internal tooling. Now to get to your question about that transition between like failure and what had happened, I, after 3 years at Walmart, we hadn't delivered anything in production. A lot of the stuff we were working on was like prototype. We were kind of integrating some things, but nothing was running in production. And so my boss had called me and was like, look, Claude, really appreciate the things that you're doing. And I'm paraphrasing here, but you know, you haven't put anything in production. You know, your team, the team had grown to about 20 people at this time. And the undertone was like, look, man, if you don't get something running in production, you're not going to have a job, you know, for too long. And when we talk about sort of failure, I was thinking about as a leader, what the hell was I doing for 3 years? You know, between building a team, was it focused? Could I have done things a little differently for how was I collaborating? What was going on? Like I really questioned my identity as a leader and my competency, you know, in my role and what I was able to do. And I had to truly be vulnerable and understand that I did not have all the answers. Like I was just so fixated on like, it's me, like me driving. I'm the leader, I'm the manager, it's me. I have to be the one to do this. I have to be the one to do that. I have to be the one to kind of help set the pace. And that experience, and I cried, man, I cried after that call with my boss because I was just like, what the hell am I going to do? And I realized that I had a whole team of 20 people that had my back. And once I realized that the collective of how we would solve a problem would make it work, this is where I tapped into, I just need to make sure that the vision's clear. I have to make sure that the strategy's clear. I have to make sure that, you know, the timelines, the staff, the scope of what we're doing, that needs to be clear. And if that's clear, I have an army of people that are willing to help execute on the things that we need to do. And I went through, man, and I mapped out, you know, a plan. I worked with the leads. We got this going. And I had about 4 weeks to get something running in production. Did it in 3 weeks. The team rallied around it. The project that we worked on was pretty much building a system that helped curate or personalize content for Walmart's homepage during one of the busiest times, like during the holiday season. And we deployed this thing. It had worked. We reduced the time of curating content from like 3 weeks to a month down to 15 minutes. Wow. And so you can imagine the impact that that had on the organization, especially during this early time. Like this is early 2000s or like mid 2000s, 2011 or 12, where, you know, you're building like dynamic pages for, you know, a high profile page on walmart.com. From that moment, the job was saved. The team grew. We won an award for, you know, the first team to production deploying on the new e-commerce platform that Walmart was working on. We went from just serving walmart.com to multiple tenants. Walmart was in, you know, multiple countries. And so our systems were used, you know, from UK, you know, to India. I mean, you name it. It was used on both the physical and the digital, you know, store experience. And it just really helped set the pace for where we're going. And I never would have done that if I did not embrace failure as a learning experience and realize that I can't do everything on my own.
This is a rebound if I've ever seen one. Wow. That is awesome. And this really resonates with something I've lived through a few months ago, really trying to change behavior, trying to change how people communicate, etc. And actually the vision wasn't clear. And as soon as we thought we had the vision nailed down a couple of times, but we didn't. And in hindsight, when we finally nailed it down, you heard the click, you heard the brains clicking, and you saw all the behaviors we wanted to see for months suddenly appear because people were passionate about it. It was clear where we're going. It was clear what we're expecting. The timeline was clear. Everything clicked. I said, what is happening? Mm-hmm. I had this, maybe not as harsh as you. My job was not on the line. I hope it's not. But really, this realization, holy shit, what I've been doing in the past months, that wasn't right, and learning so much from it. There are a couple blog posts that you wrote on the practical leadership guy that really goes into this four pieces, etc. If you're interested in this, just jump in there and have a look at that. The time is really, really getting closer to the to our end, but I just want to talk about Strava. How was starting as a VP at Strava? Again, a new leadership role. Again, a new team, no credibility or street credibility to start with. How did it feel? How do you approach that?
It was hard, man. It was very hard. I think one of the things that, you know, leaving Walmart to Strava was really an opportunity for me to see like how my leadership skills had been honed and what was going on, right? Coming into a fresh environment and being able to navigate through change. With Strava, you know, they were going through a growth stage, right? You know, this is a company that had been around for 13 years, looking to go public, had great, strong revenue year, team had, you know, doubled, tripled in size, and hiring a whole bunch of new people. And so now you have this cultural environment where you have, you know, a lot of the folks that have been there for quite some time, and then you're bringing a lot of new energy into the mix that might be changing the way processes, how to code, how to evaluate, how to do things. So you can only imagine the class of cultures that might exist.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would say is I was just thrown into the fire. And like with every company that you probably have, startup to big company, everything is always important. Everything is important. And you want it done now. And it's like, how do you find that balance of slowing down to move fast? And I would say that there typically isn't an appetite for that. What I ended up doing in joining Strava, as stressful as it is, I did not fight the current. I would say that, not initially. I did not fight the current, and I went with the flow. And going with the flow really translates to, do I have an understanding about what the company is trying to do, why they're trying to do it, and what is going to make the most impact? And then seeing how I can support at least the train moving instead of trying to dismantle the train, like see how I can't help support it while things are going, while working in the background to understand where there are opportunities, whether that could be around strategic alignment, goal alignment, competencies or proficiencies, how you evaluate talent. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And it's picking the right types of things that will make the most impact to add success to the business. In addition, instead of me doing it, how do I bring other people along? Mm-hmm. And coming into an organization, you know, me taking an authoritative approach, because that really wasn't the role that I had, it was more about helping to come in and providing the guidance, but not telling people what to do, which bringing them along as part of the evolutionary, you know, cultural, you know, evaluation journey. And that's where things were at. So, I mean, I was there for a year and, with Strava, it was great to be able to, work with the individuals and other leaders that were there to make changes, whether we made change to our planning process. We made changes to how we evaluate talent. We made changes to, you know, how do we think about organizing ourselves architecturally and organizationally? And how are we partnering together with program management, design, and product and marketing to ensure that we're all aligned with doing the things that we needed to do? Did I complete that journey? No, I didn't. Did I make my mark on the company in a positive way? I will say yes. There are a lot of positive things that people had to say with my short time there. And, I really look forward to applying those leadership skills on the next journey that I'm on.
Amen to that. Really music to my ears, all the things you've been trying to do. And I'm sure you made a big dent on this culture and really brought it forward. So really a good job on that. Is there an advice that you would have for someone who is considering this people side of the journey? They're not there yet. They're still in the IC role and they've been interested in maybe this discussion we had and this glimpse of that world, or maybe they've heard something about it right and left, but they're not sure if that's for them. What do you tell him?
You know, one of the things that I would say, kind of stepping into leadership, is, you know, ask the question, why? Why is it that you want to be a leader? And like, what is the intent behind it? And what I mean by that is, are you trying to be a leader because you want to be authoritative and do things your way? Are you trying to be a leader because you want to inspire other individuals to do something great? And, you know, it's kind of understanding that intent behind the why. Now, let's say that it's like, hey, I want to try this in because I have a passion for helping to lead and drive and do things. If that's the case, I would say get some books, you know, learn. You know, one of the things, I was trying to see if I have some books handy, but one of the books that I'm currently reading right now is it's called The One Thing. It's the one thing, the surprisingly simple truth about extraordinary results. And what that book tells you, it's about focus on what you need to do and how you need to drive the team. How do you prioritize? And you can apply that to your life. The other thing that I would say, there's another book that I was picking up. It's called The Coaching Habit: Say Less, Ask More, and Change the Way You Lead Forever. Take a look at that book, because that book also talks about asking questions and listening. And as you think about like reading that book, what you're going to realize is that as a leader, you're doing more listening than directing and telling people what to do. And it's getting enough information from others to help make a decisive, informed decision to help move things along. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have great prioritization, if you can listen and coach and, you know, and delegate and not feel like you need to own everything. And if these words sound like, hey, you know, that sounds interesting, I like to sort of do that, then explore it. Take some leadership courses, you know, join groups of leaders that have sort of navigated through. Like, there are so many different ways for you to kind of get acclimated to the thought of leadership without being thrusted into the fire when you're not ready.
Thank you so much. Actionable book references. Awesome. Claude, it's been fantastic. Thank you very much for that. Where would be the best place to find you online and maybe continue this discussion with you?
Yeah. You know, I'd say check out my LinkedIn page, just Claude Jones. You know, you'll have references and links to other things. You could see what I follow and things that I like. But, you know, I'm always open for, you know, connecting and kind of sharing things. I find joy in doing that, and I get to learn from others. So yeah, check me out on LinkedIn.
Anything else you want to plug in before we call you today?
You know, nothing to plug in. You know, I just know, you know, the one thing that I would encourage people, you know, given these times right now where we see a lot of just economic churn, you know, layoffs, you know, are abound. Don't give up hope. You know, find the silver linings in everything that you do, because this is a time that you can create opportunity, you know, to explore new things. Like, just don't give up hope. Put positive things out there.
Don't indeed. Claude, thank you very much.
Thank you, my friend. It was a pleasure, Tim. I appreciate you having me on.
Likewise. And this has been another episode of DevOps Journey. And we'll see each other next week. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I hope you have enjoyed this week's episode. If you like the show, please share, rate, and review. It helps more listeners discover those stories. You can find the links to all the platforms the show appears on our website, devjourney.info/subscribe. Creating the show every week takes a lot of time, energy, and of course, money. Would you please help me continue bringing out those inspiring stories every week by pledging a small monthly donation? You'll find our Patreon link at devjourney.info/donate. And finally, don't hesitate to reach out and tell me how this week's story is shaping your future. You can find me on Twitter. I am at Timothep, TIMOTHEP, or per email, info@devjourney.info. Talk to you soon.